Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Last time I talked about the purpose of human creation in my sermon, and that talk was mostly philosophical rather than theological. Today, inshallah, I will continue with a greater emphasis on our sacred scripture, the Holy Quran. Today we will learn what the Quran informs on the critical question, what should be the purpose for our life? As Muslims, as people of faith, what should be the purpose for our life? I submit to you that all of us look for purpose and meaning in our lives, irrespective of whether we are religious or not. Psychologists tell us that a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose, is fundamental to our mental health. A sense of purpose, a sense of meaning is critical for mental health. Without meaning, without purpose, sooner or later, we will sink into boredom. We will sink into depression and anxiety. Lack of meaning and purpose can even lead to suicidal thoughts. One of the greatest services of world religions is to provide a sense of meaning and a higher purpose for life. All religions, one way or the other, provide this service. They all teach that man, in the generic sense of the term, man was not thrown into this world out of nowhere. We are not alien in this universe. This world has an intelligent master builder, God. And since God exists and the universe is his creation, life is not absurd. Life is not absurd. It is not void of meaning. I think this famous verse in the Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse 156, beautifully sums up the Islamic worldview. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We belong to God, and to him we shall return. We are from God, and we will return to God. So it's not like we were thrown into this universe out of nowhere, as many modern philosophers claim. Religious people instinctively believe that their life is not futile. It is not pointless. As obvious as it may seem to those who grow up in a religious environment, it is not so obvious that there is meaning in this world. Those of you who are familiar with modern philosophy, you know what I'm talking about. In modern philosophy, we find a crisis of meaning. That's what a lot of philosophers claim, that in the modern era, humanity is facing a crisis of meaning. So it is not very obvious that there is meaning in this world. Omar Khayyam, the famous Iranian mathematician, astronomer, and poet, really struggled with this notion. Many of you are familiar with Khayyam's poetry, and this one in particular really speaks to the issue that I'm raising here. Khayyam said, از آمدنم نبود گردون را سود و از رفتن من جاه و جلالش نفزود و از هیچ کس نیز دو گوشم نشنود که این آمدن و رفتنم از بحر چه بود. Khayyam says, what gain did heaven get from making me? What kudos did it earn from my demise? Yet, I have never heard from anyone why I was brought here and why taken away. So Khayyam really struggled with this notion. He was also a philosopher, by the way. This is quite alarming. Khayyam's description does not exactly fill us with enthusiasm for life, does it? Nihilism and absurdism, these are two products of 20th century philosophy. They go even further than what Khayyam says. These schools of philosophy argue that we live in a silent and cold universe. There is no meaning embedded in this vast universe because there is no master plan. The universe came into existence by a freak accident. It was an accident. That's what Big Bang is. Big Bang is nothing but a freak accident in nature. And when we die, according to absurdism and nihilism, it is the end for us. Everything that you and I have worked so hard for suddenly goes up in smoke. This is senseless, they say. This is senseless. Life is pointless. So we Muslims must cherish the mindset that Islam provides for us. This mindset, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un, is astonishingly fabulous. This mindset allows us to find purpose and meaning in life. This verse, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un, essentially means that there is meaning in the universe because God exists and He gives meaning and a higher purpose to our life. Now let's get more specific. Exactly what is that higher purpose? This is the question I will address today. What is that higher purpose that you and I, as Muslims, must seek and look for in our life? What should be the ultimate goal in our life? What should be the driver in our daily life? Let's see what the Holy Quran has to say on these questions. I think the story of Adam's creation is the best place to look for the answer to our intriguing question. I am sure most of you more or less are familiar with this story in the Holy Quran. Now, let me make a point very clear. This is a story, not a historical account, as many folks take it to be. See, a lot of people, especially in the Christian and Jewish community, take the story of the creation of Adam and Eve as literal, as a historical account. But, in my opinion, and in the opinion of most Quran researchers, Adam and Eve were not actual individuals who were created some 6,000 years ago. The story of Adam's creation is a myth. M-Y-T-H, myth. Now, myth doesn't mean unreal. It doesn't mean fake. Myth is not a silly made-up fantasy or a fairy tale. Far from it. Myth, whether it is in Ferdowsi's Shahnameh, whether it is in Avesta, the sacred book of the Zoroastrians, or whether it is in the Holy Quran, in the story of Adam's creation. Myth tries to explain difficult concepts in the format of a story. Myth uses symbolism, metaphor, an allegory to convey a universal truth. So myth tries to convey a universal truth. It's not a fairy tale. Now, in the Quran, Adam is not an individual, but the human prototype. The human prototype. What does prototype mean? Prototype, if you look it up in dictionary, it means the original or model on which something is based. The original or the model on which something is formed. So Adam is the human prototype. He is the model on which every single human being is made. In other words, Adam represents the essence of humanity. Adam represents the truth of humanity. The story of Adam's creation appears in many chapters in the Quran, including chapter 2, Surah Al-Baqarah, verses 30 to 38. I think chapter 2 is perhaps the best place to start the search for a clue to solve our puzzle, the higher purpose in human life. That's where we should begin. Chapter 2, verses 30 to 38. Now, we don't have enough time to do a deep dive into all the 8 verses. So I will restrict my talk to verse 30. In chapter 2, which holds the key for us. I will focus on that verse. Now, the narrative starts with a conversation between God and his angels at a time when there were no humans on earth. وَإِذْ قَالَ رَبُّكَ لِلْمَلَائِكَةِ إِنِّي جَائِلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةٌ. And when your Lord told the angels, I am placing a Khalifa on earth. The critical word in this verse is Khalifa. God informs his angels that it is my will to place a Khalifa on earth. Not in the entire universe. Important point to remember. Not in the entire cosmos, but on earth. What does Khalifa mean? The critical word in this verse. What does Khalifa mean? Well, Khalifa comes from the Arabic root Khalafa, which means to succeed, to take the place of, to be an agent. So Khalifa is typically rendered vicegerent, successor or deputy in English. Today in my sermon, I will pick vicegerent as the translation for Khalifa. So you will hear this word a lot today, vicegerent, G-E-R-E-N-T, gerent. So vicegerent means Khalifa in Arabic language. So God tells the angels, I want to place a Khalifa or vicegerent on earth. And Adam, the human prototype, is God's Khalifa, God's vicegerent. What is the significance of this election? I don't know whether you have really pondered the significance of this election. It essentially means that of all the forms of being on earth, the form of rock, river, cow, bird, monkey, God picked Adam, the human form, to be his vicegerent. Why? Why did God pick the human form, Adam, to be his vicegerent. Because, and here's the critical thing, because of all the forms that existence can take, the human form has the highest capacity to reflect God. This is perhaps the most important thing that I have to share with you today. The election of Adam means that of all the forms that existence can take, the human form has the highest capacity to reflect God. So the human form has the highest capacity to express God. Not perfectly, not completely, but as much as a natural phenomenon can possibly allow. As much as a physical entity can possibly allow. Human has this amazing potential. Now, if Adam is God's vicegerent, does it mean that all the 8 billion or so human beings alive today are God's vicegerent? Hitler, Stalin, killers, rapists, they're all human beings. Are they God's vicegerent or Khalifa? No, absolutely not. Hear me out. Vicegerency, Khalifagi Khodavand, vicegerency is not an official title. It is not a formal title. It must be earned. Vicegerency, Khalifagi Khodavand, must be earned. It is a potential that all of us have, but it must be realized. It must be actualized. How? How can we realize this amazing potential? Through a personal transformation. That requires a personal transformation. I will come back to it later, what this personal transformation is all about. So, we have the answer to our initial question. What is the higher purpose for our human life? What is it that we must strive for to attain the status of divine vicegerency? That is what you and I as Muslims must be after. Now, does the Quran offer examples of God's vicegerents? Yes. Who are they? Who are they? First and foremost, God's messengers, God's prophets. But they are not the only ones who have been vicegerents of God or can be vicegerents of God. Divine vicegerent, Khalifa Khodavand. Divine vicegerent is anyone who leads a godly life. Anyone whose manners, character, and behavior mirror God. Thankfully, the Quran has not left us in a limbo to figure out what godliness means. In the Quran, godliness is captured in a term which our dear brother Farid loves. What is that term? Asma'ul Husna. In the Holy Quran, godliness is captured in a term called Asma'ul Husna, God's beautiful names. Let me explain what this term means. Most Quran researchers believe that there are 99 divine names in the Holy Quran. Now, in my opinion, God's beautiful names are infinite, unlimited. But let's stick to what we can find in the Holy Quran. Just, as a side note, the Quran is not a catalog that you find the names of all the prophets of God or all God's beautiful names, right? So we have a sample of those things mentioned in the Holy Quran. The critical point is this. Each name of God represents a divine attribute. Each name, each divine name represents a divine quality. Critical point here. Some of these attributes only apply to God, but most of them also apply to his vicegerent. Let me give you some example. Wahid and Ahad. Both of them mean one. There is a big difference between the two, but that's beside the point in my talk today. Wahid and Ahad, which means one, exclusively apply to God. However, by and large, the other attributes of God, the other divine names, may be realized by humans. Let me give you some examples. Karim, one of God's beautiful names. Karim, generous or gracious, can be realized by humans. Karim is an attribute of God's vicegerent. Other examples. Rahman, compassionate. Rahim, merciful. Haq, truth. Creator, Khaliq. Ra'uf, most kind. Razzaq, provider. Shakir, thankful or grateful. Salam, peace. Aziz, mighty. Ghafur, very forgiving. Hadi, guide. Adil, just. Hakim, wise. These are all God's beautiful names in the Quran, which are also attributes of God's vicegerent. Humans can attain these qualities, albeit in a limited way. The Prophet Muhammad called these shared qualities divine morals, akhlaq ilahi. The Prophet Muhammad calls these qualities that are shared between God and vicegerent as divine morals. The Prophet Muhammad said, تخلقوا بأخلاق الله. تخلقوا بأخلاق الله. Cultivate divine morals in yourself. Divine morals are God's attributes. Divine morals are God's attributes. For example, God is Sattarul Uyub. God shields people's shortcomings and flaws. God is aware of our sins, but he doesn't advertise them to the world. This is a godly thing to do. We can internalize and actualize this attribute of God in ourselves. And once we do that, we will not disclose other people's shortcomings, flaws, and failures to the whole world. Another example, Al-Adl. God is just. We can also be just as well. We can be just and fair in our dealings with others. So these are examples of divine morals, akhlaq ilahi. So our higher purpose in life is to cultivate divine morals, to take on the color of God. Now, this cannot be done overnight. We cannot overnight take on the color of God. This is a journey. In yek safar hast. This is a journey. The key to realizing God's attributes is self-purification. self-purification. Tazkiyeye nafs. Self-purification is the key to realizing God's attributes. The purer one's heart and soul becomes, the more that person can manifest divine attributes. What does self-purification entail? Cleansing our heart and soul from selfishness and egoism, which is the mother of all evils. All evils result from egoism and selfishness. Self-purification means to kick out this source of evil from our heart and soul, to cleanse our heart and soul. As our ego shrinks more and more, we make more room for God to appear in us. Now, this is Islamic Sufism 101. I'm going to repeat one more time. As our ego shrinks more and more, we make more room for God to appear in us, in our character, in our choices, in our actions. This is what mystics call divine presence. Divine presence. Huzur Elahi. Huzur Khudavand dar zindagi adami. This is the transformation that I alluded to a few minutes ago. This is the transformation that should be the main project in our life. This is the transformation that a true Muslim must make the centerpiece of her life. The final stop in the Sufi spiritual journey is called fana. The final stop in the Sufi spiritual journey is called fana, annihilation. Now, annihilation in the Sufi sense of the term doesn't mean that the person commits suicide. No, that's not what it means. Annihilation or fana means that all the remnants of egoism wither away. They just wither away. And now the Sufi identifies with God. Most of us identify with our ego. The Sufi, in the final stop of his journey, identifies with God. In this state, the Sufi is born again. A new person rises up from the ashes of the old person, the person who used to be self-centered. This time, she lives in God, not separate from God. Are you with me? Yes, most of us do our daily prayers on time. Most of us fast 30 days a year in Ramadan. But that doesn't mean that necessarily we live in God. While we do all these religious chores, most of us are separate from God. But when the Sufi reaches the final destination, she will live in God. That's what in Sufism we call baqa'a billah. Now, there is another term in Islamic discourse that you may be more familiar with, which actually corresponds to fana, the final destination for a Sufi journey. What is that term that you are more familiar with? Tawheed. Tawheed. Tawheed, for most of us, is a concept. It's a concept. belief in the oneness of God. But in Islamic mysticism, Tawheed means uniting with God. Not physically, but morally, in character. Buddhists call it divine realization. What we call Tawheed in Islamic mysticism, Buddhists call it divine realization. Realizing God in our heart, soul, and character. Now, such a person can be truly called Khalifatullah, God's vicegerent. Hopefully you followed my line of reasoning. When this journey is taken, at the end it leads to the status and the station of God's vicegerency, Khalifatullahi, because the person has now realized God's attributes. She is now a mirror that reflects God in her community. Controversial. For those of you who really are tuning in, when the person reaches this destination and experiences fana or annihilation, that person now mirrors God in her community. Realistically speaking, most of us will not complete this journey. We will not complete it. But we should not get discouraged from trying. At least we should give it a try. As Sa'di said, براه بادی رفتن به از نشستن باطل وگر مراد نیابم به حد وسع بکوشم. Going down the path of a wasteland is better than sitting idly. Even though I might fail in my desire, I would try my best. And that's what we should be doing. What matters is that we are on the path to God realization. That's what matters. Even a small dose of God realization would make a huge difference in our lives. It would make us a much better human being. So before I close, now, I would like to share with you a couple of more verses in the Holy Quran that deal with human creation, which actually expand what I shared with you today. Chapter 51, verse 56. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ I created jinn and mankind only to worship me. Why did God create us? To worship him. Now, in light of what we learned about vicegerency and God attributes, what does God worship mean? Does it mean the usual mechanical prayers? No, that's not what worship means. The truth of God worship is to try and cultivate in our heart and soul what God represents, his attributes. Here is another verse that deals with human creation in the Holy Quran. Chapter 67, verse 2. This is also another favorite of mine. الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةَ لِيَبْلُوَكُمْ أَيُّكُمْ أَحْسَنُ عَمَلًا God created death and life that he may distinguish which one of you is best indeed, which one of you is best in action. God is not interested in phraseology. As Rumi says, God is not so interested in fancy words or mechanical prayers. or religious show-off. God is interested in good deeds. Deeds that resemble His own deeds. Love, compassion, generosity, justice, peace, forgiving, gratitude. This is what God represents, and this is what God intended for human beings, to compete in these arenas, not to compete for power or money, to compete for love, justice, generosity, gratitude, peace, and compassion. In conclusion, let me summarize my talk. Super important conversation we're having today, right? Let me summarize my talk. As the Quran puts it, human life must have a higher purpose than a good paying job. Human life must have a higher purpose than lots of gadgets, physical fitness, and partying, having fun. The ultimate objective for human life is to become Khalifatullah, God's vicegerent. And God's vicegerency means taking on the color of God, cultivating divine morals, living a godly life. Now, hopefully, you and I have a yardstick to measure our success in life. What is that yardstick? How much God is present in our character. How much God is present in our actions. Not how many times a day we pray, but how much God is present in our character and actions. A successful life is not measured by how many feathers we have in our hat. It is not measured by how many trophies we have on the shelf. It is not measured by how many degrees we have. It is not measured even by how many scientific discoveries we have made or how much money we have made. No, a successful life is measured by how much we incorporate God's attributes in our daily life. How much we incorporate God's attributes in our daily life. Now, don't get me wrong. It is awesome to be a first-class scientist. It is awesome to be a successful entrepreneur, a great athlete and artist. But only as a complement, not a replacement for a godly life, for being godly. You can be rich and godly. How? By being generous with your wealth, by practicing generosity in giving to the less fortunate. In this case, you would manifest God's beautiful name, Al-Karim, the generous. You can be a scientist and godly. How? By making sure your knowledge and discoveries benefit the good of all humanity, not just those who can afford it. In this case, you would manifest God's beautiful names, Al-Alim and Al-Alim, the knower of all. You can be powerful and godly. How? By using your power in the service of social justice, not tyranny and corruption. In this case, you would manifest God's beautiful names, Al-Qadir and Al-Adl, the all-powerful and the just. Now, I hope this sermon in some small way shed some light on our major enterprise in this life, what the higher purpose of our creation is according to the Holy Quran. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.